Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little about winter wheat planting considerations, but we're going to get to a lot of other things as well and spend a lot of time in the Ag PhD mailbag, I hope, if we have time. Unless, of course, you'd like to call in and just talk about whatever's going on in your farm, or if you've got any questions for us, love to take those as well. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-44-44-2-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com. And like I said, we'll get to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a minute here. Or you can find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so I'll give you just a minute or so on winter wheat planting considerations, and then we'll get into the mailbag. But I would just say this. When we are seeding winter wheat, or when, so like for both Darren and me, we're agronomists, we advise farmers on seeding winter wheat. We're looking at a few things. First of all, weed control. We want to make sure that we've got really good weed control. The two products we talk the most about, other than obviously the burn down herbicides like Roundup, Liberty, Gramoxone, would be Sharpen for broadleaves, and it would be Prepare for grass and the non-ALS resistant broadleaves. So Sharpen is going to cost quite a bit more, probably $8-9, but it's really, really good and leaves residual.
When you say, oh, it's going to cost more, I'm like, yeah. $8 or $9 for the weed control you get out of that and
prepare,
the residual?
Prepare costs $2 to $4.
I know,
it's really
but if you've got kochia out there, there's no question in your mind what to go with.
Right?
You got to go with the Sharpen.
Yep, absolutely.
Prepare just isn't going to be great because it's an ALS. So
right,
that's going to cause you some problems on some of those weeds. But it's a great product, and for the money, it works well. I really like Sharpen when you've got these broadleaf weed problems.
Well, you should like it because it's the only real herbicide that's going to stop kochia pre-emerge. So Sharpen's absolutely the way to go. It just has to be done pre-emerge, can't be done post. Then we talk about seed treatments. So it's fungicide, it's insecticide, it's naturals, or some people call them biologicals. We use all three categories. There are so many really good products there. So we'd really encourage you, use seed treatments, use pre-emerge herbicides. You're going to set yourself up for a lot better winter wheat yields for the coming year. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag right now.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, I'm excited about this first mailbag question. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or give us a phone call at 844-44-AG-PHD. It's from Brad in Northwest Iowa. He said, I'm 40 years old, getting ready to leave the corporate world and return to the family farm. Congratulations, Brad. That is awesome. I'm super happy for you. He said, I don't have much debt yet. You should say yet there, Brad, because you will. Or significant amount of liquid funds, but I've invested heavily in my company's 401k. I've got nearly $500,000 there saved up. Through that retirement program, I'm allowed to take a $40,000 penalty-free loan if I pay it back in 5 years. There's a farm coming up for sale. I want to buy it. It's 80 acres. We'll sell for around $600,000. If I took the $20,000 from my personal savings and borrowed $40,000 out of my 401k, I could put up $60,000 or 10% towards the down payment. Just wondering if you'd walk through what type of options there would be for purchasing land as a first-time farmer. I'd love to know your thoughts on borrowing retirement or 401k money, best option to secure loans, whether that's FSA, FCS, bank, etc. Will lenders allow me to use existing or remaining 401k funds as collateral? What should I anticipate for loan length of time and interest rates? Those
okay,
kinds
just
of things.
I get it. Okay, here's the first thing I'm going to tell you. I do not recommend you borrow against that 401k. Now, I'm not saying don't go to a bank and use the 401k as collateral, but 401k, if you've put your money into the right investments, and I talk to our people about this all the time. I do a lot of personal finance stuff with our people and, quite frankly, a lot of farmers as well. And I just say, look, if you're in a 401k, just let that money sit there and just forget about it until you're going to retire and put your money in more aggressive funds. So, in other words, basically the stock market. If you look in the last 100 years, the stock market has returned 10%. You should be able to borrow your money for a lot less than 10%, I would certainly hope, if you have any collateral out there. So borrow from the bank, and the bank can use that 401k as collateral. So I wouldn't get too worried about that. So that's the direction I'd go there. What I always tell people is your goal should be prime or less. If you can borrow money for prime or less, that's great. That's got to be your goal. You can certainly talk to multiple banks in your area, but there are a lot of banks that love to loan money against farm ground. The problem is most of the time, they're not going to loan 100% on the farm grown. I mean, unless you get a really, really good deal. So I would just say, yep, you got to have a fair amount of collateral, and you should be able to get a relatively good interest rate if you have a decent amount of collateral. And interest rates are at their lowest point in history right now. Prime, for example, right now is only 3.25%. You can borrow long-term money also for very little because, well, let's face it, our economy is having some tough times right now. So it's bad that our economy is doing so bad, but the advantage is you are getting money super cheap. It's very expensive to buy farm ground. It's hard to justify the number sometimes. So kind of what our dad always said is, boy, if you can afford to buy the ground, great, but you don't want to tie up all of your cash just buying up the ground because you got to have equipment, you got to have some operating capital. So it's just, we're in a very capital intensive industry. It is challenging, but yeah, I mean, you can certainly make it. There are a lot of people that have done it and come out of the corporate world, let's just say, and gone back into or into farming at an older age, 40, 50, 60 years old. You definitely can do it, but it just, as I'm sure you're well aware, requires an awful lot of work. You want to be a farmer, you're going to put in the hours. It just takes a lot of time and effort and capital.
It sure does. Hey, thanks for that question, Brad. We really appreciate that. And good luck to you as you get going. Brian, I had a question come in about planting population. This is from MA in India. He said, with soybean plants, what should the distance be between plants? Depends on your row spacing. Let's just take, for example, that you're in a 30-inch row. That's what we plant a lot of beans at. And say you're shooting for 130,000 population, 130,000 plants per acre. That'd be about one every inch and a half. Now, if you're going to do that in 15-inch rows, obviously you'd have twice as many rows out there. So you could spread those seeds out a little bit more and go every 3 inches. So it just depends on what your row spacing is going to be. I would say you're probably targeting somewhere in the 125,000 to 150,000 per acre. Hey, thanks for the question, MA. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this.
Stop losing money from your stored grain with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Hot spots and moisture in your bin can cost you thousands in lost revenue. The End Zone monitors outside conditions to run your fans exactly when you want them to, naturally bringing your grain to ideal temperature and humidity. Master bin management with the End Zone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Go. Sorry about that. Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. And, you know, we're talking about winter wheat planting conditions today, but we're also taking your calls and questions. A lot of decisions here at the end of the season. Maybe you're thinking about something in your corn crop or your soybean crop or alfalfa or some other crop. We need to address those right away. So don't worry about, oh, boy, you're talking winter wheat today. I've got a question on a different crop. That's fine. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Let's head to the phone lines here. I want to talk just a little bit about seed treatments and some of the things that you need to be thinking about. We got Rohia Deardahl with us right now with BASF. And Rohia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Now, we were talking here off air on Twitter, a little conversation about some of the things that we're seeing out there this year. A lot of crazy different disease things happening, nematode issues. What's happening in winter wheat? What are some of those types of situations that growers say, I don't have to worry about this or that in winter wheat, that you would say, you know what, in my experience, I'm starting to see more of this or that that you do need protection from?
Absolutely. Great question. One of the things we have to remember with winter wheat, that so much of our yield potential is decided before we even put the seed in the ground. And that's going to be in terms of picking a good planting date, getting our populations right, getting a good variety selection, and then finally putting a good strong seed treatment on that variety. One of the things that I'm seeing a lot throughout the region is if we're planting into less than ideal conditions, cold soils, wet soils, we are prone to some serious fungal pathogens. So I work closely with a product called Stamina F4 that gives us four different AIs that give us really broad stroke protection against our fusarium, our pythium, some of our dry rots, but also common root rots and some of our smuts and our bunts that can be serious problems and really yield limiting for us on our winter wheat crop.
You mentioned four different active ingredients, and I just love that we have so many different products now that we can actually use, because we were relying so heavily on one mode of action, two mode of action products that were starting to fail a little bit out in the fields. Now we've got more modes of action and different modes of action. That's been really nice. And one of the things that I've noticed is just better plant health. Even in the spring, you can tell where the seed was treated. It just looks different. Are you seeing the same things?
Yeah, absolutely. When I walk into a field, one of the AIs in Stamina F4 is F500 or Paraclostrobin. And what that AI does is, obviously it's giving you good fungal protection, but we do see plant health benefits. We see better cold tolerance, better cold emergence, and it also treats really well in the cold. So when we're thinking about our northern climates and, you know, the weather turning on a dime, seeing when you walk into a field, you see your stand is up and your stand is established. I think look at it, know your seed treatments at work there, but definitely makes a big difference getting that seed treatment on there, because we don't know what Mother Nature is going to throw us. You get the seed in the ground and you get a bad cold snap, get a lot of moisture, your seed is really going to have to, your stand getting established there, you're really going to have a good plan in place. And a seed treatment can really help protect against a lot of that early season stress.
Stress is really the big thing. We talk about a lot of things in crop management, and the more we can reduce one stress, the less that next stress that we know is going to come along, the less that stress is going to hurt us. And we're talking about seed treatments here for winter wheat. I just think about winter wheat as a crop that we know is going to have to endure a lot of stress. It's going to be out there all winter. There's going to be a lot of chances for things to come along that are going to impact winter survival. And if we can protect things up front and get that crop off to a healthier start, we just got a lot better shot at making it. There's no question about that in my mind. Rohia, what do you see for growers that are treating versus growers that are not treating? What I'm seeing just from the growers we're talking to, we're hearing more and more growers saying, you know, that's just one of those expenses I can't cut. I'm going to have to do it.
Yeah, that's I've heard that before myself. And one thing that I would talk about, though, is I'm in the middle of doing an experiment right now where I'm looking at seed-borne diseases and pulling lots of seed out of growers' bins, and then culturing the pathogens that are on there. Because there's been instances where you can find common root rot, you can find fusarium, you can find, our dry mold penicillium out there on the seed. So if you're not using a seed treatment and you're making the decision not to do that, then you do run the risk of starting your crop out with pathogens sitting right there. And the only thing that's really going to protect you from your seed-borne diseases is a seed treatment. So there's not really a second chance on that. And without, good stand establishment and a good plant population, your yield is already hampered right out of the gate.
I totally agree. We're talking to Rahiya Deardahl-Young with BASF. Rahiya, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Look forward to talking to you again.
You bet. Thank you so much.
Let's head out to Ohio. We've got Jim on the line with us right now. Jim, how are you doing?
Good.
I understand you had a question about the corn stalks. Are you worried about breaking those stalks down? Is that what you're after today?
No, after the corn is harvested. I want to put on something for beans next year.
Okay.
This fall on the corn stalks, a herbicide. So what do you recommend?
Well, what are your main weeds you're after?
I'm after lamb's quarter and mare's tail.
Okay, and what are you going to do for tillage on those corn stalks? Are you in no-till?
I'm going to lightly disc them and then spray.
Lightly disc, then spray.
Okay. Any chance you might switch it around? And maybe spray first. I'm thinking about the mare's tail. It can. So it all depends on what weeds we're after. So if it's perennials and sometimes mare's tails, we might spray first. If it's just lamb's quarters, then we'd say till. And then if you want to spray after that, you certainly can. It's just also, here's the other thing. We've been through enough rough fields over the years, and if you disc first, it's not going to be super smooth for you anymore go out there with the sprayer.
Vertical,
go ahead.
Vertical tillage tool, not very deep. Vertical tillage tool, not very deep.
So you're going to disc and then vertical tillage or just vertical tillage?
No, just vertical tillage.
Got it. Okay. So
And then just leave it lay and then go into it next spring and plant.
Yep. Okay. So typically people that spray in the fall are talking about Valor or Authority. And if you would like to, you can throw a yellow along with that. You could certainly do a group 15 as well, but I prefer the yellow. So that's Prowl or Trifluralin. Honestly, if it was me, I might consider, let's say, Valor and Trifluralin, or Trifluralin and one of the Authority products, spray it, and then run your vertical till out there. And the reason why I say that is that way you get you get better burn down, number one, and number two, you're going to get the trifluralin incorporated at least just a little bit, enough to bury it and still get some activity in the spring. Now, the other thing that I would probably consider throwing in, and it might sound a little crazy, would be either 2,4-D or Banvil. So in the spring, if I'm going to plant Extend, I'd spray a high rate of Banvil this fall. In the spring, if I'm going to plant Enlist, then I would spray a high rate of 2,4-D this fall. And the reason why I'd throw the Banvil or 2,4-D in is better burn down for any of these weeds that would be up already, especially winter annuals like mare's tail. So that's what we will commonly do when we're after mare's tail in the fall, is we'll throw in Banvil or 2,4-D along with, like I say, either Valor or Authority, plus like a Trifluralin or Prowl.
Okay, now this year around the area here, we've had a lot of escapes with lamb's quarter.
Yep.
Seemed like they came on late.
Yep.
And I've had some, I had Liberty beans, and I sprayed them with Cheetah, and I thought I killed everything, but them lamb's quarters reblossomed up again.
Yeah, so a lot of that can be rate. You can actually go up to 43 ounces now with Liberty top of Liberty
Tolerant
Crops.
To kill the ones that are out there, but it also has no residual.
Right, exactly. And so that's where having a really good residual works. So usually we do three pre's in the spring. We'll do a Trifluralin or Prowl, plus a Valor Authority, plus Metribuzin. All three have really good activity in lamb's quarters, and when we spray in the spring, we get more residual into the summer as opposed to spraying in
the
fall.
And then you can add a group 15, and I really prefer Warrant versus any of the Metolachlors for additional help on lamb's quarter later. And thanks for the call, Jim. We'll be right back.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good.
That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit atticusllc.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Downtime during spraying can lead to huge yield losses. Keep rolling with the Pentair Hypro Force Field. This pump features a unique self-regulated chamber that allows the pump to run dry while eliminating cracked seals, so you can spray longer and more reliably. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Stop losing money from your stored grain with the Endzone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. The Endzone monitors outside conditions to run your fans so your grain naturally reaches ideal temperature and humidity. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about winter wheat planting considerations, but certainly there's a lot of different crops that the topics we're discussing here will wrap right around. We're doing a little bit of winter rye planting on our farm coming up here soon, and some of these same practices we'll utilize for that. And then maybe you're even a spring wheat producer and you're listening to some of the different diseases. We're just talking about some of the fungal pathogens that we're seeing out there with Rahia Deardall Young with BASF. Real happy to have Joel Ransom on with us right now with North Dakota State University. Joel, how are you doing?
Good. Good afternoon.
You know, winter came a little bit early in North Dakota this week. For our listeners who are in other parts of the country, can you talk about how cold things got and what it looks like right now?
Well, it did kind of take us by surprise. It's been a long time since we've had a frost that came that early. So we did have, frost that was pretty widespread, I think, in the eastern part of the state. And I would say the lows were kind of in the 28 and above. So I would say it would be more of a mild frost, but certainly there were a lot of damage to the corn and soybean in that particular area.
When it comes to winter wheat, talk to us about planting date in your state. Is there kind of a drop-dead date that you say don't plant before this and don't plant after that?
Well, our optimum recommended date would be for the kind of the top tier of the state, be the 1st through 15th of September. So we're right in the middle of the sweet spot for planting winter wheat in that area of the state. And then the lower half would be something like 15th of September, the 1st of October. Well, you know, I think that we've had a bit warmer weather, exception of last year, but warmer weather as we get into the fall, and so I think you can push those dates a little bit. And but I would say a drop dead date typically would be something like the 15th of October, certainly in the lower part of the state.
Now, we've talked about weeds and weed control and what some of the tougher weeds are in different parts of the country. How about in North Dakota? Is it kochia? Is there something else that's tougher to fight in winter wheat?
Well, I think in winter wheat, we are challenged quite often by some of the winter annuals, you know, so some of the Broma species that make it through the winter and get a head start. Those seem to be somewhat most problematic. But we have plenty of other weeds to fight with, just the general weeds and wild oats. Those are always something that we need to worry about.
One of the things as we travel around, one of the things that I think people don't understand about North Dakota is the diversity of crops. There's a lot of growers with three crop rotations or even more. That's got to help a little bit, too, on some of the weed control, right?
Oh, indeed. Yeah. It's nice to have different crops going in because you've got different weed control options, and so you tend to get ahead of some of the problematic weeds by just having a diversity of crops.
We're talking about seed treatments and diseases, and I know that's a big deal. A lot of farmers will talk about that. How about insects? Do you have issues with wireworms and other bugs impacting winter wheat stands?
You know, I have not heard many reports of insects being problematic, the soil insects. Mainly, getting planted on time. Hopefully you have enough heat to get it up early. You know, those would be the things that kind of get ahead of some of these other problem insects.
Yeah, getting a great stand is always the challenge. How about fertility? Is it a standard practice in North Dakota? We know the soils are going to freeze. Do you guys like to get fall fertility work done in front of winter wheat, or do they rely on spring applications more?
Well, I'm sure there's some diversity out there. A lot of our winter wheat growers are no-tilling, and so they may actually put some fertility down at the time of planting. You know, personally, I like to see the fertility get put on in the spring. Of course, in the spring with nitrogen application, you've got to make sure you have a rain to incorporate it or some other way to get it in. But I think generally that's the safest way, given the fact that we've had wet falls, we've had warm falls. I think probably a little safer to put it on in the spring.
Talk to us about variety selection. What are some of the things that growers in your state are looking for with wheat varieties? Obviously, they want high yields. Are there some other characteristics that they're looking at?
Well, certainly we talk a lot about winter hardiness, probably more so than other parts of the U.S. And so that's kind of on the list. And I would say that, you know, we don't really seem, I was just actually looking through the certified seed guide, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of certified seed available this year of many varieties. So maybe the choice isn't that great, but certainly I would put, winter hardiness, and especially if you're going to come into, like, prevent plant land that didn't have standing stubble, I'd go with something that's going to give you the best chance of winter survival. You know, so we've got the Jerry and the Paragon, some of the varieties out of Canada. And, you know, and if you're planting into the stubble, I would say that you can probably be a little more lax on the winter hardiness. And I think the other thing would be that if you get started early and get a lot of yield potential developing, then you're going to want something that's going to stand up. And I think that's kind of one of those things that it's been a little bit challenging with Jerry. That's been one of our more popular varieties, is its standability is probably not as good as we'd like. And so that would be another consideration. I think, you know, growers obviously want something that's going to stand up for them. And,
sure.
And there are a few options in that regard.
Yeah, there are a lot of things to think about, and we're talking to Joel Ransom with North Dakota State University. One thing for those of you who aren't really geography buffs, Fargo is in the south part of North Dakota, so we know conditions are going to get tough for some of those northern growers. Right now is their sweet spot for getting winter wheat planted. Really appreciate Joel Ransom here taking some time to talk to us a little bit about how growers are picking varieties and what management practices they're using in North Dakota. Thanks so much, Joel. Really appreciate having you on.
No, thank you.
We've got Randy out in Indiana right now thinking about corn silage. Randy, how's it going?
It's going great. Heard you talk last week about selling corn for corn silage, and I wondered how you've come up with a method that's the fairest for everyone to price it. And also, if you're getting manure back on those acres, would you adjust that price somewhat because of the manure value?
Okay. Yes, great questions, Randy. I'll just tell you what we've done. There are a lot of different methods out there. So what we agreed to this fall, because we can't get manure, this dairy hasn't opened yet. They're just loading up now, and the cattle will be there later. But anyway, we got 8.5 times. So in other words, we looked at what are we getting for tons, and we multiply that times 8.5 times our local corn price. If we were getting manure back, we'd share the cost in the manure, and we'd only get 8 times the tonnage times the local corn price. Okay. Last year, what we did with our local dairy was we went out and we actually combined some, we did yield estimates out there. We had a couple of people come and look at yield estimates, and we took our estimate too. And we said, okay, it looks like, let's just say, for example, 200 bushel corn. And we just figured, all right, what's the local price? And that was it. And then we got manure later, and we paid for 100% of the manure application. Okay, the other thing that we have talked about for next year is, well, if we can look at overall feed value, maybe we could have even a little more premium on our price for the silage if there's basically more value for the dairy. So we're constantly trying to figure out how do we do a better job for the dairy, because ultimately if they do better, then they can afford to pay us just a little bit more money. So those are kind of the ways that we have done it here in the past. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to know exactly what it is, but that's what we've done.
Oh, that's interesting. That's similar to what we've done.
Sure.
And, we've adjusted it over the years, but your suggestion about value for the dairy is a great one, because that's what we need to do is work together to get the most valuable feed for them.
Yep. Absolutely.
But you have to be compensated for that, too. We looked at brown midrib.
I know, you lose yield. Hey, Randy, sorry, we're up against a break here. We got to run. If you want to talk more, just hang on through the break. We'll be right back.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
When it comes to commanding herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Panther SC, an animal when it comes to speed of control and long residual on a broad spectrum of tough broadleaf weeds like mare's tail, Palmer amaranth, and water hemp. And did we mention convenience? Panther SC works in pre-plant, pre-emerge, and post-harvest systems and keeps your rotation options open. Nufarm and Panther SC, here to help.
Hey, Adam, new drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree! In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean and weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetual, and its burn-down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit Valent.com/Perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the broadcasting from inside. We've been out filming today. We've been
we
out
have.
At the Ag PhD Field Day site, and actually, I came in and I was talking to somebody in the building who said, "Wow, why don't you have a sweater on?" I said, "Have you been outside? We've got sunshine. It's gorgeous out there. I wish we could be doing the radio show outside of the studio, but
yeah, sunshine and no wind. Yes.
But unfortunately, though, Brian, there's noise." And we can't have the noise as we're doing the radio show. Step back into the Ag PhD mailbag.
Well, no, before we get to that, right before the break, we were talking about silage and brown midrib. Go ahead, Darren.
Well, there's pros and cons with brown midrib corn, and that's something that...
The con is yield. What's the pro?
Well, the pro is you've got more digestible energy. So if you've got a hybrid that's got more leaves above the ear and you got this big, tall, leafy thing... Yeah, you're going to get some tonnage. You're going to get some really nice silage to work with. And
okay, but how about picking regular varieties that yield much better that are still decent on digestibility?
You know, the thing that I like is finding something that can get a lot of corn. And if
a lot of grain.
Yeah, if we can get a lot of grain and if we can keep that plant green as long as we can into the season, we've just got a great opportunity to get more milk per acre. So that's been our focus, but certainly there are some growers who really like to use brown midrib corn. You can certainly look that up. Yeah, there's some advantages to it, like you said, with increased digestibility, disadvantages of lower yields, often kind of one of those plants that grows slower in the early spring. There's certainly some management things we could do to try to help that out, but yeah, not quite as hardy a plant a lot of times as some of the field corn that we've got.
But like we were talking about, you always want to think big picture in whatever business that you're in, and you're selling grain to someone. In this case, it's the dairy, and you're selling the silage. So you got to think about, all right, what makes them more money? What always makes your customer more money? And if you can do that and achieve that, well, then your customer can pay you more money. And again, in this case, it's a local dairy, a large dairy that we're working with that's just getting going here. They bought out the old dairy, which was a lot smaller. Well, you start having a whole bunch of cows there, and if you can make even $1 a day more profit on each cow, that's an enormous amount of money over the course of the entire year. So we got to look at that digestibility thing. And yes, the brown midrib has some advantage there, but what I'd rather focus on personally is how can we take regular grain corn and make it as close to the brown midrib as possible, yet get a tremendous amount more actual grain, which means in most cases more income for us. But yeah, it's working hand in hand with whoever your customer is. All right, let's continue on with our mailbag questions there, Darren.
All right, get this one from Larry, I believe in Tennessee. He said, I sprayed Grazon Next primarily to get control of Carolina nettle, which is bad, in his terms, bad. Okay, so he's going after Carolina nettle, but he's wondering, is it advisable for me, so I sprayed mid-August, is it advisable for me to reseed or drill Timothy in September? I've read the label and I'm hoping to improve my Timothy stand along with a mix of orchard grass. Do you see a lot of injury to grass species following Grazon Next applications?
No. No, a month later, most of the time, the grass species that you seed are going to be fine. But yeah, when you spend a lot of money on seed, then, I mean, ideally, you'd like to have no herbicide laying in there that could have any possible negative impact. So the 2,4-D, okay, so let me step back. Grazon Next is Milestone and 2,4-D. The 2,4-D after a month is gone.
Is Milestone.
Yep, so the 2,4-D is all gone after a month. It's the Milestone that would be left, and is Milestone very hard on grass as it's trying to germinate? Typically, no. So am I very worried about that? No. Do I have a very, very slight amount of worry? Well, of course I do. But I think you're most likely going to be fine. But yeah, again, just follow the label. Whatever the label says, usually you're going to be okay.
All right. And he said, I've still got some infestations of milkweed, though. The Grazon Next really dinged it up, but didn't take it out completely. And I've heard Brian talk about Tordon as a potential herbicide with activity in that, but it's got such a long residual. I really hate to commit that land to that. Is there something else I could do potentially? You know, you could burn it back with a high rate of 2,4-D going forward, just straight 2,4-D and,
right,
and take it out that way. But it's a perennial with a deep root system. So you're not going to completely wipe it out. The best thing would be a Roundup burn down in between crops.
Exactly.
And you start, high rate.
Right. When you start talking about, hey, I'm going to seed a new grass, you could actually even go out and seed the grass, and before that grass comes out of the ground, spray the Roundup. So yeah, we want to hit it with a very high rate of straight Roundup. Don't mix it with Grazon. Don't mix it with 2,4-D. Don't mix it with anything else. Just use straight Roundup. Use a low water volume, high concentration of Roundup, and you should be in good shape on the milkweed.
Said, how about seed treatments for Timothy and orchard grass? Could we utilize something like Quikrets, or is there another natural type product that could help with establishment and growth?
We'd probably talk NutriCycle and Heat Shield. So we'll commonly use those on corn, wheat, soybeans. There's no problem putting NutriCycle and Heat Shield on there. Those would be good ones. On top of that, you know, I'm not exactly sure which one of the fungicides, the seed treatment fungicides, would be labeled on Timothy, but I would consider that as well. NutriCycle and Heat Shield definitely should help, though.
Okay, and then the last one, he said, in Hay Ground, I've heard Brian advising deep application, non-surface application of the immobile nutrients.
Right.
How do you do that in hay fields if you're not doing tillage?
The only way would be if you had some type of knife or coulter to go down below the ground. Now, you may call that tillage. You might call that strip till. But, I mean, certainly if it was just, let's say, a coulter, that would create minimal disturbance. You try to get the coulter down in the ground a little ways and place the fertilizer down deeper. But the whole point is this, and the reason why I say that is, if you're going to put out, let's say, phosphorus, potassium, zinc, copper, some of these nutrients that just aren't going to leach, how are they going to get down into your root system? I mean, it might take years, and you might have 4 years of hay on there, 5 years of hay, 10 years of hay, and then finally the nutrients are getting down there. Or if you just simply place them down in the ground, well, now they're ready today, and you can take advantage of them today. So here's the other thing. If you get any soil erosion and all your nutrients are literally still laying on the soil surface, guess what? You lose those nutrients. So it's just being responsible environmentally, and it's being smart agronomically to put nutrients that don't move down in soil down in the soil so they can do you some good. I mean, that's why we do our show. That's why we do all our Ag PhD stuff. It's to help you get more out of the dollars you're spending. We don't necessarily want you to spend any more dollars. In fact, I'd like you to spend less if you can, yet get higher yields and greater profitability.
All right. Thanks for the questions. Got this one from Brian in Ontario, Canada. He said, got a question regarding banding 2x2 dry fertilizer in soybeans. Some people in our area claim they're having success with it. I'm wondering, have you seen data showing a yield response or a good ROI in doing this? Or what situations would you recommend doing a 2x2 dry fertilizer for soybeans?
Okay. So first of all, anytime we talk about banding dry, we have to be careful that it's not anywhere near the seed. don't band dry right in with the seed.
Especially because, soybeans that are pretty susceptible to injury.
Yes, because number one, the dry is going to pull moisture away from the seed, so you might have less chance for germination there. And then there's a lot of salt, and the salt could possibly hurt the germination and hurt the young seedling as well. We've done a whole bunch of 2x2 and especially even 3x3 and 4x4 on corn, soybeans. It's fine. It's just you always have to think about what do I really need to raise a great crop. So in terms of yield data, it's going to vary dramatically. I'll just give you an example. If I'm very low on phosphorus and potassium and I band some dry phosphorus and potassium and I get the rain to break it down quickly, then it's going to be great, and we're going to go, wow, everybody should do this. Well, no, not everybody should do this because not everybody's that short on P and K. If you're super high on P and K, you're going to ban this, and you're going to go, wow, that didn't make any difference. In fact, it might even hurt me. So we also have to be careful about how much we put in any spot in the field. So when you're 2x2 and you place a, let's say it's a very high rate of any fertilizer, you have to worry, and especially when it's dry, about the root system coming over, hitting that high salt spot, and then burning roots off. So we prefer liquid because it's more available today, and sometimes we can even do some safer forms. But yes, banding dry 2x2 can work. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean, weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and it's burned down and long-lasting residual powers making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit valent.com/perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer. And I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. If you have an agronomic question, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. Got an email from Asa who says, I'm starting to strategize my planting program for soybeans next year. I can do in-furrow liquid with my 15-inch row planter. But I'm wondering what's safe and what's advisable. I'm not trying to save money here to get rich. I want to get more yield. I know I don't want to have too much fertilizer, but I'm wondering what other options besides fertilizer I could utilize, like fungicide, inoculant, natural type products that would help make me some more money.
Okay, so first of all, if you're going to do much fertilizer in furrow, you got to be really careful in soybeans. Soybeans are super sensitive. So many times we're talking about low salt fertilizer and a gallon or less, that's it. So that's going to be a tiny percentage of your overall fertility program. Yes, we do some stuff in furrow. We're using some naturals, and Microcycle is one product I can think of we used a bunch of this year. But then on top of that, we'll use just a little bit of fertilizer, some micros. So for example, maybe it's a quart or two of micronutrients. It's maybe a quart or two of, like for us, we use a lot of agri-liquid stuff, ProGerm, ProGerminator, SureK, those kind of things, but very, very low rate. And we have to be more careful when we have lighter soils and we have a drier spring. Now, the problem is, I mean, you know what your soil is, but you don't know if you're going to have a dry spring or a wet spring. So that's why we always are probably way more cautious than we need to be, but we just don't want to have an issue. Yeah, can you do, let's say, inoculant in furrow? You could, but you're better off doing it as seed treatment. Many of the fungicides, you do some in furrow? Yes,
though, Brian,
but we found better results with seed treatment.
You could double inoculate. You can put it on the seed and do it in furrow.
Yeah, but if you're going to put it in furrow, you got to use 2 to 3 times the rate. So do I really want to spend all that money, or could I just go with half the cost or 1/3 of the cost and put it on the seed? I'd rather save the money. So we were just talking about this a few minutes ago. My goal for you is to spend less and get more. And that's what I would suggest you do. Don't put the inoculant in furrow. And with fungicides, same kind of deal. Put the fungicide on the seed. Don't put it in furrow. Now, you can try some different fungicides. Every once in a while, fungicide in furrow will pay. But fungicide on the seed a lot of times pays better and costs less. So I'd probably go that direction.
All right. Thanks for the questions, Asa. Really appreciate that. And good luck with your soybeans. Got this from Eric over in Minnesota. He said, I love your radio program. I just wanted to add one thing to Brian's rant that he had on tiling yesterday. I found tiling is great weed control, as we had a field that had a bunch of drowned out spots historically where water hemp was like Christmas trees by harvest time. And these areas are spread out every year with wind and erosion. We pattern tiled the field. Yep. Within a couple of years, no drown out spots, no weeds. Best weed control I've found has been drainage tile. Thanks, Eric. Really appreciate that.
Okay. This is another thing we often say. We don't want you to have to spend money on herbicide. We want you to use the best cultural practices there are. So that means crop canopy is the very best weed killer there is. It's better than any herbicide ever invented or ever will be invented. Crop canopy does the trick, because if weeds can't get sunlight, they're dead. So it's awesome. Do everything you can to raise a great crop, and drainage is always number one. It's ahead of fertility, variety selection, or anything else. Drainage is number one.
All right, another drainage question. This comes from SM, who said, do you have any experience working with drainage tile on very hard clay soils? Will it work? Does it just take a little longer?
Well, yes, but I mean, there's a wide variance in, I mean, what you consider hard clay might be different than what I consider hard clay. So I'd like to look at the soil test. Send me a soil test, and then I'll tell you kind of what I think. We know this. The higher the cation exchange capacity, the closer together your tile lines need to be. So if you've got a lot of clay out there, then your cation exchange capacity is going to be higher. Cation exchange capacity is the measurement of the type of clay, the amount of clay, and the amount of organic matter you have in your soil. And again, the higher the number, the heavier the soil, the closer together the tile lines need to be, because the slower the water's going to move. But yes, tile can absolutely work in heavy clay. Now, I will say this. There are some situations. I'll just give you an example. I was out on the east coast of North Carolina years ago, and I was working with this, or I was out to visit this farm, and they had like 15-18% soil organic matter, if I remember right off the top of my head. It was just off the charts, which meant their cation exchange capacity was also off the charts. And they had all these ditches. I mean, every so many feet. And I'm going, wow, guys, do you really need to lose that much of your field putting all these ditches in? Couldn't you just put tile in? They said, well, we could put tile in, but we ran the numbers and it would just be so much tile. We'd have to have tile so close together. It seemed a little crazy to us. So we put in ditches instead. I am a huge believer in drain tile. It's very seldom when I see when tile wouldn't work. So tile should work in your situation, even if you have a lot of clay. It's just those tile lines may have to be closer together. It's going to cost more, might take a little longer to pay back, but hopefully eventually it all pays off for you and works well. You got to have good drainage. And drainage isn't just running water off above ground. Drainage to us always means subsurface drainage. We need to keep the water table down. That's the whole point of having tile lines out there. So you have air in the soil for your microbes and for roots. So you can have more roots and more microbes, which means healthier soil long term.
Right. Thanks for the questions. Get this from Doug in Ohio. And he said, I saw your discussion about nitrate and water quality. The suggestion here that a majority of nitrates in our water are coming from cities doesn't seem to match up to data that I've seen from the National Center of Water Quality Research at Heidelberg University. A sample upstream and downstream of a wastewater treatment plant may show a difference in concentration, but if we look at things from an overall watershed loading perspective, that's where I believe the majority of nitrogen nitrate is coming from non-point sources, typically agriculture. He said, I'm wondering if you could direct me to research or information supporting your claims. It may lead to farmers. He said, it may lead to farmers not taking responsibility, which gets into a blame game with urban areas that we're currently seeing play out in our local Northwest Ohio region.
Okay, so here's what we had talked about that particular day when we did that show. I just made the comment, you're going to find most of this research is being done to bash the farmer and support cities. And I think it's a joke because you can go upstream and downstream from almost any city and you're going to find there's a tremendous amount of pollution that comes out of the city. I don't know what the exact numbers is, or what the exact numbers are and what the total loading is from ag versus non-ag. But I do know this. There about the only real nutrient that anybody's concerned about that comes from ag is nitrate. And here's something you may not have known. Most of the nitrate that's coming in through into the water is not what the farmer applied. It's nitrate that's coming out of the soil's organic matter. What most people, and even farmers, and even for me, I didn't even know this until not all that many years ago, organic matter releases roughly 20 to 30 pounds of nitrogen for every 1% of organic matter every single year. So if you look at the heart of the Corn Belt, where the soil organic matter levels are 5 to 7%, that means we're talking in the heart of the Corn Belt in the United States, 100 to 150 pounds of nitrate will be coming out of that. And if it doesn't have a crop to pull it up, guess where it's going? It's going down, and it's whether there are tile lines there or not. Water keeps flowing below the ground, and it eventually is going to find a river or a lake. So even if we had zero agriculture and zero applied nitrogen, you'd still have nitrate in the water and a bunch of it. But the point is this, what's the dose that you can drink and still be okay? It's 10 parts per million. And I would challenge you to go to almost any river in the United States or Canada and test the water. Go there today. You're not going to find 10 parts per million of nitrate nitrogen in the water. So in other words, for the nitrate, it's safe to drink. I'm not saying any other factors, okay? You got to look at all the other stuff too. But I'm just saying the one nutrient that anybody gets concerned about from agriculture is nitrogen in the nitrate form. And what I'm trying to tell you here is there is a tremendous amount of pollution that's coming out of cities. And nobody wants to bash the cities. They all want to pick on the farmers. And I think it's a joke. And number two, most of the nitrate's coming out of the soil organic matter. It's not even coming from the farmer applying nitrogen. And what ends up in the river is less than 10 parts per million almost all the time anyway. So who cares? What difference does it make? Why are we even talking about this? The zone of hypoxia is the same in total size versus what it was 100 years ago. So why are we having this discussion about farmers? Let's stop blaming farmers. Let's start looking more at cities, water treatment, sewage treatment, where the real pollution is actually coming from.
Thanks for listening to our program today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.